I mix what I like. Second Childhood Production is for the Killer Bees Podcast, and I mix what I like. .org. Alan Weider joins us now to discuss his new book, Ruth First and Joe Slovo in the War Against Apartheid. Weider is an oral historian who lives in Portland, Oregon. He is a distinguished professor emeritus at the University of South Carolina and has also taught at the University of the Western Cape and Stellenbosch University in South Africa. In the last 10 years, he has published two books and numerous articles on South Africans who fought against the apartheid regime. Professor Weider, welcome again to the program.
Thanks, Jared. Glad to be here.
So let's just start generally. Tell us a little bit about your book and about its two subjects, Ruth First and Joe Slovo.
Absolutely. You know, in the U.S., so many people, unfortunately, only know about Nelson Mandela. But even in South Africa, where I've worked since 1999, doing stories of teachers and other people who fought apartheid, I was always kind of amazed that there wasn't a comprehensive book about this couple who were arguably two of the half a dozen most important people in the struggle against the apartheid regime. And there were other parallels that I felt towards my life. These were two Eastern European Jews who were totally committed and focused on the end of apartheid in what was, for the most part, a black revolution. And they were adored and respected and so much a part of it. They went to university with Nelson Mandela. They were very close to the two other main leaders, Oliver Tambo and Walter Sisulu, and they made their mark, and they were very, very different people. So Ruth was trained as a journalist, and after she had to go into exile, was a writer and an academic, and then led a center for research in Mozambique. Joe was trained as a lawyer with Madiba, Nelson Mandela, was the author of the move in 1962 away from nonviolent struggle to armed struggle. And to be clear, that should probably be called armed propaganda because they weren't going out and trying to kill people, but they thought they needed to make a statement against an ever more oppressive government by bombing electrical pylons and that kind of thing to show the government that they could fight back the oppression against black South Africans. And then Joe, too, of course, ended up in exile and then later on became the leader of the underground army, Mkhonto weSizwe, which means Spear of the Nation, with, again, the focus of getting back into the country and forming a socialist democracy in South Africa. The original title for the book was Partners with Separate Paths because they were such very different people, except that both of their focus was totally on ending the apartheid regime.
One of the things that I wanted to ask about was, you know, you talk about the separate paths a little bit that these two took. Both are considered, as you recount in the early stages of your book, revolutionaries. And some time is spent at least describing them as real revolutionaries or quoting people who describe them as real revolutionaries. What makes First and Slovo real revolutionaries versus apparently fake revolutionaries or some other kind of radical?
Yeah, I think that's a really point to kind of focus in on. Both Ruth First and Joe Slovo, it's hard to say lifelong members of the Communist Party because as a 2-year-old, you're not a member of the Communist Party, but they were longtime members of the Communist Party, and they came there from very different ways. Ruth First was almost, again, a contradiction in terms, but royalty in the Communist Party of South Africa. Her parents were both on the executive of the party. Her mother and father took her to rallies and to at the Johannesburg City Hall from the time she was 6 years old, where they were protesting, and it was before apartheid, so they were protesting against racism and class disparity both in South Africa. And in fact, in her last high school year, she gave a talk on the City Hall steps about the issues of racism in South Africa. And, you know, we're talking, again, years before the apartheid regime won power. If you could label Ruth First, or maybe it's not even a label, if you could say, what's Ruth First trait in terms of being a revolutionary? I'd say one of the strongest things was that she was always willing to speak back to power. Edward Said's line of challenging power. And one of the things that was amazing about Ruth First was that she clearly, given in her journalism, doing exposés, intense exposés against government action, against what would be referred to as slavery, where the government and the army would sell people to farmers to work the farms with no guidelines of any kind in terms of these people's treatment. And she exposed this again and again between the late 40s and the late 50s, as well as other things. But the other thing about Ruth First was she was able to talk back to her own comrades. So she challenged comrades when she thought that they weren't being revolutionary. And it wasn't a party line revolutionary at all for Ruth First. So I'll give you an example. At one point in the 1940s, the African National Congress didn't want to allow a newspaper, a black newspaper, but conservative black newspaper called Bantu World, into their conference. And Ruth First wrote a full page article in the front of the alternative or the radical newspaper called The Guardian. And it was saying basically that the ANC was doing the same thing to Bantu World that the government was doing to The Guardian newspaper. Later on, the same kind of issue comes out with Ruth First challenging Stalinism and challenging the South African Communist Party's connection to the Soviet Union in very big public open fights with Joe Slovo. Joe Slovo came to the Communist Party because at 12 years old, his mother died and his father put him in rooming house after rooming house. He had a teacher in what would be comparable to middle school who was a member of the party that sort of brought him in. He also learned in the rooming house from old Jewish socialists. And he became totally dedicated. There were two things about Joe Slovo. One was he was willing to talk to anybody. And that didn't make him weak. He was willing to talk to the enemy and really go at it with the enemy because he did believe in conversation. But the other thing was he was an amazing strategist and tactician. And that was a big part of his role underground in organizing the coming back into South Africa, which he did all the way up and through 1989, leading until Nelson was released in 1990 and negotiations started shortly thereafter.
Part of the intent behind my question was to also look at this question of revolutionary violence and the relationship to the more radical, militant wings of the anti-apartheid struggle, in particular, as you mentioned, their relationship with Nkonto Osizwe and with Chris Hani, who we know was as popular, if not more popular, among black South Africans than even Nelson Mandela was, and was a critic of the direction South Africa had gone in, you know, post-apartheid, so on, and as it's called, at least post-apartheid, and so on. You know, obviously in the book you talk about, and as you've already said, that Ruth First and Joe Slovo are Eastern European Jews. Well, one of the questions I have is why was their work for revolution centered in South Africa as opposed to in Europe or in Israel or in other parts of the European world. Why? What specifically led to their, obviously, other than the particular biographies? I mean, obviously, with birth and the family histories in that country. But what was it that drew them and centered their work in South Africa, even after exile, even after each left the country proper?
That's a great question. And actually, let me talk to that, and then I can talk back to Joe's relationship with Chris, because I think you hit on something that's very, very important there. The whole issue of being a Jew in South Africa, because when there was a movement away from where their parents came from Eastern Europe, when it was almost like when you were gone, you were gone. And it's hard to make a direct connection to what were the effects at home in terms of the pogroms and being in Jewish labor organizations and then being South Africans as opposed to being living in the U.S. or living in the U.K. And I think that one of the things that Ruth first was thrown into was the old Communist Party had a lot of racism itself, but it appears to me, and it's a hard thing to dig out, that her parents were on the side with a number of other people that said no, that the real fight in South Africa is the fight against racism. I think as Ruth developed, she wasn't willing to divide the issue of divide world imperialism and class and power from race. And actually, Nelson Mandela is on record as saying that Ruth First and Joe Slovo were two of the people at the university in Johannesburg who got him to thinking about the connections of class and race more than he had ever done before. But in terms of the Jewish question, it's really interesting in South Africa, because here were these people that fought in a black revolution, who were white Jews, and most of them were communist of some type of definition, and yet on the other side, there were also, of course, white Jews that condemned them, and felt that their place was tentative in white South Africa, but they were going to make sure that they were whiter than other whites. So the line used to be, when apartheid came into power in 1948, the line used to be, not all Jews are communists, but all communists are Jews. Now, we know that wasn't true, but for Joe Slovo, again, according to Nelson Mandela and according to Oliver Tambo, who's spoken about this too, they viewed Joe Slovo, and it's hard in the U.S. because we have different definitions of non-racialism, but they viewed in a very, very positive way that they view Joe Slovo as a non-racial man. And it's interesting because Joe was much more comfortable with on the ground, and Ruth wasn't as comfortable. But yet, when things came out from the African National Congress Women's Organization, they listed Ruth First as one of the people that was a leader within their organization, even though she wasn't really a member of the ANC.
And also, is this what I found fascinating also was not only what I liked about was Ruth First's book, Barrel of a Gun, but also that you say that both Ruth First and Joe Slovo were more or less Jews in name only. And later, Ruth First actually describes herself as an African. I was just interested in that development and how that made them relate to one another, or what relationship that those politics or that view engendered among other Jews. I think you sort of spoke to that already. And then other white radicals around the world with whom I know that they came in contact and worked as well. Is there anything you could add to that or explain?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what you said is perfect in terms of being at most cultural Jews. They weren't religious in any way. In fact, when Joe died a year into the new South African January of 1995, the Barney Simon, who was a theater impresario who had ran the Market Theater in Johannesburg and was integrated during apartheid. And somehow, I mean, he was always marked, but they didn't go after the Market Theater for a long time, and then they did force him into exile. But he referred to Joe Slovo as Yiddish, not Jewish, meaning that he was of a culture, but he wasn't a religious man. The other day, I did a talk in Cleveland, and somebody that came talked about their next-door neighbors being white South African Jews, and they still refer to Joe Slovo as the devil, which many, many, many South African Jews did, to the point that when Joe died, and his funeral is a story that talks to your issue about here is this couple that are white South Africans involved in a black struggle. Joe Slovo's funeral was in the Orlando Stadium in Soweto, and 40,000 people came in the township. And one of the speakers was the head rabbi of South Africa. I know, you know, the United States doesn't have a head rabbi. And he basically scolded South African Jews for the way that they treated Joe Slovo and other people who fought for a democratic South Africa, and meaning other Jewish people that fought for a democratic South Africa. So I think there was that division of, no, they weren't religious at all, but there was something hugely moral in the struggle for both of these people, even more moralistic for Ruth than for Joe. Ruth, you're right, Ruth never talked anything about being a Jew. Joe did it from the perspective of humor and Eastern European humor, and he knew that well, and he knew stories of that well.
One of the questions that I also had, and I alluded to it a moment ago, was a book that quite frankly, I had never heard of, and I'll have to now go find and read until I was reading your book, but Ruth First's Barrel of a Gun, in which she says, and I was very interested in this, and maybe if you could add a word or two about what this meant for her relationship to other radicals and others involved in this struggle. But she says in this book that power lies in the hands of those who control the means of violence. What role did that question or that statement play in her politics and in her work with those in this struggle against apartheid in South Africa?
I think that one of the things that Ruth believed was that what had happened across the continent was that colonialists in some ways picked their own African military leaders. So colonialism was still on the continent even after it was gone. But yet she felt that there was responsibility for herself as an African and her comrades as Africans to take responsibility and to lead in a different way and to fight against what you just mentioned of power being in the barrel of a gun. And I think that Ruth First wasn't alive in 1990. And I think it's worth, you know, the people that are listening knowing that Ruth First was violently killed by the South African government. She was killed by a letter bomb. She organized a conference for the UN that brought people from all over the world talking about the evils of the apartheid regime. This was in Maputo in Mozambique in August 1982. And they had hoped that the bomb would go off during the conference because the conference was on campus. And she didn't go to her office. And it was a couple of days later when she was murdered cold-bloodedly by agents of the apartheid regime. And I think that had Ruth lived, she would have been talking about it in a different way when apartheid was ending, because I think that she saw that the ANC, she would have seen that the ANC in the negotiations that Joe was involved in, and Chris Hani wasn't, by the way, that they were going to be run by the oppressive powers of the world, or they were going to connect to the oppressive powers of the world, meaning the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, the United States of America, the United Kingdom, that there were agreements in place as the negotiations started within the country. So I think it was back to speaking back to power, that she believed it, she didn't believe in democratic centralism. She believed in a socialism of the people. And that's what that book was about. And it has amazing lessons for the present in South Africa and actually throughout the world, I think, of a different type of revolution.
And finally, you know, you talk a little bit at the end of the book about, well, sort of a critical assessment of where South Africa is today in relationship to the politics of First and Slovo. Could you talk a little bit about how both First and Slovo are commemorated in death that describes their reception by the African population, by people, by particularly the radical African population in South Africa and really throughout the continent?
Absolutely. So, as I just said, Ruth was assassinated in 1982. She's buried in Matoa, which is just outside of Maputo. It would be considered a suburb of Maputo. She was buried at an African National Congress funeral. The Black MK comrades who were killed the year before by the South African government, she's buried, her grave is right next to theirs. She's honored in Mozambique on the campus of Eduardo Mondlane University. There is a commemoration for her that was done by Frelimo and Black Mozambicans. And she is starting to be honored more and more within South Africa as the years go on. Joe was buried in Avalon Cemetery in Soweto. There's one other white person that's buried there. Joe Slovo was set to rest in the ground, not by the South African military, but he was laid to rest by younger Black MK comrades. And the legacy that Joe had for the younger underground soldiers was so amazing, because most of the young people came out in 1976 after the youth school children were massacred in both Johannesburg and Cape Town, protesting about the language of instruction in the schools. And the ANC was a little bit leery of the Black Conscious Movement, of Stephen Biko, and these were the young people that were coming out. And I should say, to Ruth's credit too, it was Joe Slovo and Ruth First that made Oliver Tambo, the president in exile of the ANC, understand that or join them in that this would be the spark of getting back into South Africa. It would be these young Black students who were willing to die for their freedom and for a democratic, and I'm using that with a big D, South Africa. So I think that's the case. In terms of what either one of them would say for today, it's kind of funny. The first thing I was asked to do this summer in South Africa, their winter, was to do a talk on what would Ruth and Joe say. And I said, I can't do that. But what I can do is say how their work, and that goes back to introducing the question with the barrel of a gun, how their work would speak to the present. And I think that both of their ideas, their writings, and their actions talk to today and talk to the people's socialism that is not the reality in South Africa today. And they would be, and their work would be questioning, one, the lack of jobs, two, the lack of services provided, meaning that people still live in poverty with bad health care, with bad schools, with the lack of electricity, with the lack of general human services. And they would be, I think they would be, their work speaks to that even today. And I think that there's a bubbling right now. There's a bubbling in the townships, and there's the beginning again of some of civic organizations saying, we've got to speak back to the government, that we consider ourselves socialists or communists, but we don't like what our leaders are doing, and we question what our leaders are doing. And I think that as you talk, you could add with the barrel of a gun. The other thing that I wanted to say with that is that you know, you can't do go back history, but I think it is important to say that within the first 5 years from 1990 to 1995, after the ANC was unbanned, the Communist Party was unbanned, that three of the main leaders, Oliver Tambo, Chris Hani, and Joe Slovo, were all dead. And I personally think that had a powerful effect on people who might have questioned the way that things were going and certainly have gone in South Africa. I'll be at Busboys and Poets on 14th and B on the 16th, and that's from 6:30 to 8:30. I hope that people come out and we can continue the conversation.
Alan Weider, thank you again for joining us. The new book is called Ruth First and Joe Slovo in the War Against Apartheid. This Second Childhood production is for the Killer Bees podcast and I mix what I like.org.